is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour. The Merlin Diamond Mine in the Northern Territory has been dormant for years, but this week some action is taking place with a company keen to bring this project back to life.
The diamond prices are seeing favourable increases, and we don't see that stemming anytime soon. So, you know, a very, very good time to get involved and reinvigorate the Merlin project.
Yeah, bringing some sparkle back to Merlin. That story soon. Another Australian abattoir has just been banned from exporting beef to China. The Meat Industry Council says it makes no sense.
There is always going to be issues. The difference with the issue with China this time around is that our dialogue is limited. So that is why it is becoming more and more difficult to really work towards getting a better outcome.
All these stories and plenty more coming up on today's program. I really hope you can stick around. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC, and g'day there if you're tuning in via our podcast. Now, the AgriFutures National Rural Women's Award has just wrapped up. I've spent the last hour or so in front of my computer watching the virtual event take place. It was an absolute ripper. So the annual awards, they were held online this year because of you know what. The live event, it was online, but they managed to cross to all states and territories, so you got to see all of the nominees from the various jurisdictions, including our very own Amy Kirk from the Northern Territory, who we'll be speaking to in just a moment. The event, however, concluded with the big announcement. Who is the National Rural Woman of the Year? This is how it all unfolded just a moment ago.
Okay, the suspense is killing me. Minister, can you please announce the 2020 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award National Winner?
Thank you. Drum roll, please. The 2020 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award National Winner is Cara Peake from Western Australia.
Yeah, so well done to Cara Peake. She is based in Broome. She is a lawyer. She is an entrepreneur. And she is the founder of Saltwater Country. Now, this is an organisation that's dedicated to empowering and mobilising the connection of Aboriginal people to land, horses and stockmanship. She is now the National Rural Woman of the Year. Here's a snapshot of her work and her passion there in the Kimberley.
The community I live in is probably one of the most multicultural communities in the country and has been for a very long time. My name's Cara Peake and I live in Broome, Western Australia on Yarra country, and I'm a Yarra Bunuba woman. So I wear many hats on a daily basis, but most relevant to this project, I'm the founder and chairperson of Saltwater Country. It was really ingrained in me the strength and resilience of Aboriginal stockmen and stockwomen and the work that they have done in the Kimberley, but no doubt across the country, to develop the pastoral industry, to work for station owners in a historical context for free. So I wanted to pay homage to that strength, and I wanted to create an organisation that could cherish that but build on it as well. We started with running rodeos, camp draft, country music events because we had no money. Being in a remote community and dealing with the logistics of that and the nightmare of contracting in, that I had a look around and thought, we can teach people to do this. So what we did was decided to start Saltwater Academy, and I decided that it would be the best place to build a training and development arm for Saltwater Country, the organisation, and feed into the event. And then they had the opportunity to go on a volunteer to employment pathway and end up with paid employment at our event or with Saltwater Country itself, depending on what's going on. So we've even had three-time Pro Bowl riding world champion Adriano Marias travel 30 hours to Broome from São Paulo, Brazil, to teach our kids how to ride. In doing so, it really put Saltwater Academy on a national stage and an international stage. But importantly, our young people see people that look like them, with lived experiences like them, doing things that they never thought could happen. I was lucky enough to receive a Westpac bursary as part of the West Australian AgriFutures Rural Women's Award Prize. And what that did was enable us to secure support for financial modelling for Saltwater Academy, which goes to the financial viability and sustainability that we require to move forward, and also to help us develop a business plan. That, of course, can then be taken to potential investors and provides them with a level of understanding, a level of security about what it is that we're doing, what it costs, and that enables us to become independent and set us up for a financial and sustainable future. The things that make me sleep soundly at night are knowing that the community that I work for and the things that I should be doing for them are somewhat on track. The job's never done. It's a lifelong journey. But knowing that I am doing what I can with what I have, with the people that I know, I think if we all do that, then there'll be a day, hopefully, where I don't have to be there when my niece discovers that she's treated differently because of the colour of her skin. And so to be working towards that, so she and other kids like her have the same access to opportunity, yeah, that helps me sleep a little better at night.
That is Cara Peak, winner of the AgriFutures National Rural Women's Award, which has been held today. She is the founder of Saltwater Country. She is from Broome. Well done to Cara. Joining us this afternoon is Amy Kirk, the NT's Rural Women's Award winner. How are you, Amy?
I'm really good, thank you, Matt. How are you?
I am well. Tell us about your day as part of this event.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to be at the Admiral House in Darwin with my friends and family and representatives from the government and AgriFutures and Westpac. This morning we had a little brunch to get ready to celebrate the online virtual event which AgriFutures put together. So there was an event in each capital or in Ballarat in Victoria and in Wagga in New South Wales and ACT. Across the country there was different events for everyone. So we've had a lovely morning tea and we watched the announcement and we watched the winner, Cara, accept her award and many congratulations to her and Cressida, the runner-up. They're both amazing and inspirational women, as all of the state and territory finalists were for this year's AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. And now we're just enjoying a bit of lunch and celebrating the next steps in my journey that the award has afforded me, and thanks to Westpac for the bursary. I don't think this will be the end for me at all.
No, not at all. Well, tell us about where your project's at the moment, Amy.
Well, we've been working on securing some funding to start a serious game. So we're trying to increase the accessibility of some of the programs within the Science Totally platform that I created as part of the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. So we're working on securing funding, but we've trialed some prototypes, some paper prototypes, very cheap kind of prototypes to trial with a few communities around the Northern Territory. And I'm working with some developers and some designers to turn it into a serious game. And that's a game like any computer or tablet game, except it has an educational aspect behind it. So ours would be based off the game that we currently play hands-on in the communities, and we're just transitioning that across to a different learning platform.
How challenging has it been rolling out your project in these current times where access to communities and travel is tough?
Yeah, it definitely halted a lot of my progress at the start, which is why we're very lucky that AgriFutures decided to run the award over several years this time instead of just the usual one-year block that they would run the formalities over. So it was very difficult to get access into communities in peak COVID time, even though we've been really lucky in the territory and done a really good job of controlling our cases and stopping the spread of COVID, you know, we're still trying to protect those vulnerable populations and communities from the transmission of the disease. So as everything's opened out and we've done a really good job, I've been able to get out to some of those communities and those really remote communities, which has been amazing and very rewarding. But I definitely had to adapt the start of the program in the early days to more of a Darwin-based situation, that's for sure.
And tell me, the book, The Sensible Sawfish, still available in all good bookstores, is it?
It's not published yet, but I am.
Oh, isn't it?
No, I've got some. I just hand out copies. I've sent them to, those have been sent to communities for free, but I'm seriously considering putting it forward for publishing. Just working with an illustrator at the moment who's a friend of mine, and hopefully, maybe.
Get it ready before Christmas. Oh, I reckon that's the go. Get it ready before Christmas.
That might be a good business idea, Matt. I might have to take that advice for sure.
I thought it was a ripper of an event. I mean, it's challenging putting stuff online, but they did very well, AgriFutures. Each nominee had a 3-minute video, beautifully shot, that was shared with everyone involved. I hope and assume they'll be making those available online for people to go and see, Amy.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so too.
Yeah,
someone
great.
Asked me that. Yeah. I'd love to have mine. I you know, most people don't like watching themselves, but they made me look nice. I could just watch it with the volume down so I can't hear the sound of my voice.
Hey, no, well done. Look forward to hearing more about your project as it continues to roll out, and I'll let you go back and enjoy the lunch in there. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Matt. It's always great having a chat with you.
See you soon. That is Amy Kirk, the Northern Territory's Rural Women's Award winner. The national awards held online today. That announcement of Kara Peake, that was made just a short time ago, just before the Country Hour came on air. Well done to Kara. Well done to Amy and everyone involved.
This week on Landline, railway safety in the country.
We know with flashing lights that is the accepted indicator of a significant hazard. That's why they're there, and that's why we want them on trains, because they are dangerous. They're the most dangerous poorly lit vehicle on land.
And meet Australia's latest imported breed of sheep. Could they be any cuter?
We sold the first ones for $25,000 each, and we've sold our weathers for $7,000.
That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
It's 18 to 1 here on the Country Hour. The Lucapa Diamond Company says it's in the final stages of fully acquiring the Merlin Diamond Project in the Northern Territory and has just started a geotechnical drilling program on the site. So this remote mine, it sits about 700 kilometres to the southeast of Darwin. It's out near Borroloola. And it actually holds the record for producing Australia's largest rough diamond. It's been pretty quiet out there at Merlin for years. There hasn't been any significant commercial operation since about 2003. Stephen Wetherill is the managing director of Lucapa. I spoke to him about the new work that's now happening on site.
Yeah, Matt, we're very excited about the program. We are getting on the ground, so to speak, in earnest. We have geotechnical drilling crews on the ground starting their drilling to inform our feasibility study. Whilst we have been on the ground for a couple of weeks, returning essential services back to the site, today's announcement marks or signifies the start of good work and hopefully the recommencement of mining operations at the Merlin Diamond Project.
Are you able to paint a picture for us of what's happening out there right now?
Right now, our team's on the ground. We've got teams from Lucapa and Australia Natural Diamonds on the ground who are supervising the drilling crews from DDH1. They have started the geotechnical drilling program, which will inform the technical inputs into our extraction methodology, and particularly our innovation with using a vertical pit mining methodology at the pits, or in the pits, should I say.
Will it potentially influence the final stages of acquisition, depending on what happens?
No. We are fully geared up to concluding those as soon as possible. We have successfully attended to most of the CPs. There's one CP that the Northern Land Council are assisting us in the liquidator with finalising, and we look forward to meeting the traditional owners on the ground where we can, you know, just tick the box in that final condition precedent and formally acquire the project. We certainly are going great steam ahead, and that is why we have commenced with our activities, because we are, you know, very positive about the outcome.
It's been a long time since there was any action out at this remote mine site. What sort of condition was it left in?
Look, there have been a couple of vendors on the ground through Ashton and Rio Tinto, Matt. I think they obviously, when they concluded their operations on site, you know, successfully rehabilitated it and returned it to the way that it should be. A number of smaller vendors have had access to the ground and done various bits of work on it. Nothing material. So in terms of the condition of the site, you know, the pits are all intact. Yes, they have water in them. And, you know, it hasn't taken us too long to refurbish the accommodation and get the essential services such as access roads and power and communications back to site. So we were very pleasantly surprised with the condition, and that's why we were able to get on the ground fairly quickly and get going.
If all goes to plan for the company, what does the next 12 months look like at Merlin?
Oh, very busy, Matt, unfortunately for us. I think in terms of the development program and the timeline with which we would like to get on the ground and producing, you know, at Merlin, you know, our timeline that we've set ourselves is within the next 24 months, so 2 years. So right now, geotechnical crews on the ground. Next year, we'll have exploration crews on the ground as well, looking at additional anomalies. We'll start preparing the ground for the plant establishment and upgrading the camp to take on, you know, the number of people that we are looking to employ at site. So it's going to be a very, very busy time for us.
What do you hope this project will mean for the territory?
Look, I think it's going to be very important. You know, we're obviously bringing a significant investment to the territory. With that investment and establishing a mine, I think that we will certainly be looking to employ a significant amount of people as well. So it'll bring a number of jobs. And in terms of longevity, we're looking to be there for many, many years to come. So, you know, it will be an important contributor to the GDP of the state for many years to come. Importantly as well, we've got a strong ESG focus, so we look forward to working with the local communities to ensure that what we build there, you know, benefits those communities, you know, whilst we're there and for the years beyond as well.
And how's that diamond market looking at the moment?
Oh, what a difference a year makes, Matt. You know, last year, the diamond industry all but ended with the onset of the pandemic, and even if you could produce, you found it very difficult to get your goods to market. You know, moving on 12 months, and our industry has returned, you know, very, very strongly. Consumer demand is strong, and fortunately for us in this environment, we're working in a very constrained supply environment. So with strong demand and limited supply, you know, the diamond prices are seeing favorable increases, and we don't see that stemming anytime soon. So, you know, a very, very good time to get involved and reinvigorate the Merlin project.
That's Stephen Weatherall, who is the Managing Director of Lucapa Diamonds, the company out there at Merlin near Borroloola, a drilling program underway, bringing that mine back to life if all goes to plan.
G'day, it's Brent Murdoch. I'm the Director and General Manager of Vista Gold. I look after the Mount Todd project, and we always listen to the Country Hour.
Shares in Lucapa are down 2.9% as we go to air this afternoon. However, over the last month, shares in Lucapa have gone up 34%.
Woohoo!
Joined in the studio by Dan Fitzgerald with some more resources news. Dan, an oil and gas company is being given approval to get out there in the territory and do some fracking.
Yes, Matt. A subsidiary of Empire Energy, Imperial Oil and Gas, has just been given approval to frack up to 7 wells in the MacArthur Basin, so just to the southwest of Borroloola. Now, earlier this year, of course, Empire Energy, it received $21 million from the federal government to speed up this type of work, and this is the environmental approval for that work to go ahead. So Imperial Oil and Gas, they've got approval for the construction of up to 6 wells. So some of those wells will have more than one well on the pad there. So 6 pads, sorry. They'll 50 Ks of access tracks and 90 days of production testing of those 7 wells. Now, in the environment management plan, Imperial says it has tried to line up meetings with traditional owners to talk about this work that's already approved, but a couple of them were postponed due to COVID. So in this environment management plan, Imperial writes, "For the avoidance of doubt, Imperial will not undertake any hydraulic fracturing operations of flow line installation under this environment management plan until these have been presented to the community at an on-country meeting."
Okay. Meanwhile, Origin Energy had its AGM today.
Yeah, so AGM, just a chance for shareholders to ask questions of the company, amongst other things. There are a lot of questions about Origin's activity in the Beetaloo, mostly from people who seem to be very anti-fracking. One of those came from Alawa Elder May August, who was on a bit of a dodgy phone line, so I won't pay the question to you, Matt, but he was essentially asking why Origin was continuing with its fracking program when some Indigenous people were opposed to it. This was the Chairman Scott Perkins' response.
Thank you for the question. Look, can I just say at the outset that we all individually as board members and all the management team at Origin acknowledge the ancient connection that traditional owners have to the Beetaloo, and why assurance that any activities can be conducted safely and respectfully is of paramount importance to those traditional owners. But I do need to clarify something, and that is that our Beetaloo activity is carried out with the support of native title holders, who are the legal and traditional decision makers for where we undertake our exploration activity. The federal court has determined the native title holders in the Beetaloo Basin area. Those native title holders, through their own traditional decision-making process, have elected representatives and have chosen bodies to represent them. In this case, all of them having chosen the Northern Land Council. In respect of the safety and security of the fracking operations up there, we absolutely understand your concerns and why you would be asking this question, but do believe that there is ample scientific evidence that confirms that our activities are safe.
That's Scott Perkins. He's the chairman of Origin Energy. So there were probably a dozen or so questions with a very anti-fracking line, Matt. And the chairman actually pulled up the meeting after about a dozen or so and stopped taking questions on Beetaloo and fracking and moved on to other business, saying that they didn't want the meeting to get clogged up with just one issue.
Thanks for the update, Dan. Shares in Origin, as we go to air this afternoon, are up 1.57%. Right across the territory on the ABC, you are tuned into the Country Hour. There's a bit going on today. Did you hear this one? A meatworks in Brisbane has become the 9th cattle processing plant in Australia to be suspended from exporting beef to China. Australian Country Choice. It processes around 1,400 head every day. And in a statement said Chinese authorities had detected a chemical often used to treat bacterial infections in dogs. They'd found it in the meat that had been processed at its Cannon Hill abattoir. The Federal Department of Ag says it's requested a second test to confirm these findings. Chief Executive of the Australian Meat Industry Council, Patrick Hutchinson, says limited relations with China at the moment are causing problems.
Whilst we have a stay, I suppose, in the relationship, the problem remains that we don't really have effective dialogue. There is limited dialogue, but certainly when we come to things like intelligence gathering and other issues in relation to that, that ensures that, you know, these issues do occur, and when they do occur, they occur with this ferocity because we're not having the usual discussions that we would have either business to business, association to association, or in fact, government to government. So, you know, this there's a potential for these to we hope not occur in the future, but as you've rightly pointed out, it seems to be keeping occurrence.
Are you getting enough trade relations support from the likes of the Australian government?
I think that we're working with the Australian government, certainly from a technical side, they are working as best as they can with limited dialogue. I think more broadly, I suppose the ongoing issue, not just for us, but for any agricultural trading industry. I mean, yes, we're the biggest, but I think that essentially what we know is trade is collateral damage. So when we have issues of bad relationships. Now, you know, relationship issues have occurred with many other markets for the last 50 to 100 years for many different reasons. And we can even go back only 20 years ago to the Lamb 201 case with the US, where they were going to, the Clinton administration was going to apply tariffs to lamb, and we had to work hard to negotiate that out. So there is always going to be issues. The difference with the issue with China this time around is that our dialogue is limited. So that is why it is becoming more and more difficult to really work towards getting a better outcome.
The suspension is due to an antibiotic mostly used in dogs and never in cattle has been found on some frozen beef. Now, this isn't the first instance that China has suspended a plant over the detection of this chemical, because John Dee in southern Queensland has already been suspended for this exact reason. Has there been any second testing done for the likes of the John Dee shipment?
Yeah, that I know that the work that's been undertaken, and no doubt from ACC's perspective, they all undertake the same thing, is really doing those tracebacks to show if there has been any incidents of the product being utilised or inadvertently being causing a residue in product. That information is obviously commercial in confidence, but it is being worked through to the Department of Agriculture and Water and Environment. They've provided that to China some time ago, so that process will go through again. Noting ACC's press release, it is something that we will be looking into further, because it isn't something that is utilised in cattle in this country, and it is both dog and cat, and also is used with humans in regards to eye complaints.
So with these incredible headwinds that are facing processors, including high cattle prices, how close are they to shutting up shop because they just can't keep operating at a loss?
I think that governments, federal and state, as well as the production sector, whilst very supportive of our industry, must be cognizant that we cannot maintain in this area forever. So what we're really looking at, and we know that it will be an election year next year, is we've been very well supported by Agriculture Minister David Littleproud. We can only, again, thank him for a number of key areas that he's been trying to work on to assist us, most notably the congestion busting exercises and the investments, many millions that have been invested there. However, we've got to then look at further afield. We've got to get access to workers, and then in turn getting access to workers allows us then at the same time, no doubt, to be getting access to more livestock. Thirdly, it's then the stability of the logistical challenges that we face, which everyone is facing globally. So once we can get ourselves to that, then fourthly, we can then start tackling the harder issues that we know that we need to. And one of those, obviously, is our relationship with China moving forward, because we should note we can diversify for volume and we can be sending volume elsewhere. Our issue is we can't diversify for value. So whilst we've got overinflated livestock prices at this time, they can't last forever, and we know they won't last forever. But it's about when we get back to normality and we get back to a stabilised scenario, what is that livestock price going to be?
That's Patrick Hutchinson, the Chief Executive of the Australian Meat Industry Council, speaking there to Amy Phillips. You can read more about this story online right now if you go searching for ABC Rural. The price of fuel has gone up this week. We'll be talking about that in the second half of the Country Hour. But now it is news time, 1 o'clock. Let's go to the newsroom.
G'day, my name's Amy Kirk. I study sharks and I bloody love them. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you this lunchtime. I trust you're well. The AgriFutures National Rural Women's Award was held today. The winner, Cara Peak from Broome in Western Australia.
The 2020 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award national winner is Cara Peak from Western Australia.
Yeah, the founder of Saltwater Country. You can read more about her project, her passion, her work there in the Kimberley if you head along to the ABC Rural website right now. Well done, Cara. In the second half of the Country Hour, we are going to be talking about roads. What's the worst one in the Northern Territory? I bet you've got a thought. I bet you reckon you know the one. Well, AANT wants to hear from you. It's looking to advocate for some change, so it wants to hear from you. What's the worst bit of road, worst bit of intersection in the Northern Territory? We'll talk more about this in a moment. Also talk about the rising cost of fuel. It's on the up and up and up. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. How are you, Beck?
Good, thanks, Matt.
Few records broken in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, unfortunately, temperature records. Tennant Creek yesterday afternoon reached their October maximum temperature record, 42.4 they received, which is not pleasant. And also Darwin overnight only dropped to 29 degrees. So quite a hot and humid night up here on the coast as well.
And so the next 24, 48 hours, does the story change much?
Not so much over the next 24 hours if you're in central or northern parts of the territory. So still expecting those heatwave conditions to continue in the north. We are seeing a bit of a change moving through the southern districts. So that trough has already moved into the Lassiter district. Yulara, we're just starting to see that temperature starting to drop now already. So there's quite windy conditions associated with that change as well coming through, and just a chance of the odd storm about, which won't drop too much rain, but just could produce more gusty conditions. Yeah, so that change moving through, expecting to drop temperatures by about 4 to 6 degrees by tomorrow. So should be a nicer day if you're across those southern districts. But
yeah,
still
how
very
far
hot.
North? How far north will the change push?
Unfortunately, you'll still be quite hot in the Barkly, Tanami districts for the next couple of days, but cooling down a bit on the weekend.
Okay, looking at radars, not much to report at the moment. Could that stir up and change later on today?
Yeah, there's a lot of dry air upstairs again today, so that's just stopping those thunderstorms from developing across the top end just at the moment, but there is a chance that they could still manage to get through. Any storms that do form over the western top end, they could have some damaging wind gusts in them though, so okay. Just be aware of that as well.
Anything else we need to be aware of this afternoon?
Yeah, that's the main things, the hot temperatures and those particularly gusty winds in the south, and also with storms in the north as well.
Okay, thanks for your time this afternoon.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
That is Rebecca Patrick at the Weather Bureau. Just looking at some of the rainfall figures up to 9 o'clock this morning. Adelaide River Township has recorded 10 millimetres, Bachelor Airport 13, Haywood Creek's had 19, La Belle Downs Cattle Station 29 millimetres. They've probably already clocked up 150 for the wet. They just have got the knack out there at La Belle. Fish River, 2 millimetres. Catherine Bridge, 1 millimetre.
Extreme heat can be a killer, so stay smart and beat the heat. Keep hydrated with plenty of shade and water for you, your family and any pets. Cool down with wet cloths, fans, air conditioning, or a cold shower or bath. babies and the elderly really feel the heat. Check that everyone's all right, and if you don't feel well, speak up. Beat the heat with ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Oh, and I should mention Tortilla Flats recorded 11 millimetres. That's a nice drop out there at Tortilla. The text message here at the Country Hour is 0487 99 1057. Got a message here from Lewis in Alice Springs who says, Country Hour, what's the worst road in the Northern Territory? It's the road to recovery from $8 billion in debt.
Hi, I'm Annie Harvey at the Bonning Yards just south of Alice Springs, just waiting for some more road trains. You're listening to the Country Hour.
It is 10 past one. What is the worst road in the Northern Territory? Is it our road to recovery? Is it the Tanami? Is it the Duncan? I haven't been on the Duncan for a while, but last time I was out there, my golly. Or maybe it's a little intersection in Pine Creek. Anyway, I bet you've all got a thought on this, and if you do, AANT wants to hear from you. It's running a risky roads survey, and it wants your input so that it can advocate for change. So if you've got a gripe with a road or a little intersection, get in touch with AANT, Anthony Hill. He's the chief executive. He had a chat to Joel Spry about this survey.
The survey is on risky roads across the territory. So it really came about because we receive at the ANT office a lot of feedback from motorists about issues that they see relating to roads right across the territory. So we decided to develop a survey tool to capture this feedback. And that's what was launched last Tuesday. And it's a very easy tool to use. You can nominate either an intersection, a piece of road, a whole road, and the survey uses an interactive map showing NT roads and drops a pin on the area nominated by participants. So easy to use, and we're really wanting to capture as much information as we can about the risks that people see day to day on the road.
So you're the CEO. Have you had any sneak look at some of the early data that's coming in?
Oh, I have actually. Yes. Yeah.
What are you seeing so far?
Well, at this stage, we've had about 45% or several hundred, firstly, respondents so far, which is great. Early days. The survey goes until the end of October. And to date, we have had 45% have chosen a road, 55% have chosen an intersection. Right across the regions throughout the territory, we've seen responses from Alice Springs, Catherine, Remote, and obviously in Darwin. And around some of the key issues relate to road surface, road design, signs, lines, traffic signals, and also roadside issues. So there's been some popular intersections that have been nominated throughout around Darwin region.
Well, popular is probably one way to describe them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's right. And look, what we're looking to do here is we're going to get a top 10, and then we'll use this information to obviously lobby government and work with them to inform their planning for future road infrastructure projects.
It's interesting that you, as AANT, are running this survey, because isn't it the responsibility of government and councils, road safety, that type of thing?
Look, it is. But one of the key things that AANT do is advocate for motorists, and we see it's part of our responsibility to be able to seek as much information as we can. As we were getting a lot of information and a lot of people calling us, making complaints to us or nominating their issues. So we thought, why not? Let's build a tool that can capture that information and work with government to make a difference.
That's Anthony Hill. He's the chief executive of AANT. This survey is open until the 29th of October. You can find it on the AANT website. Pretty easy to find. It's 14 past one here on the Country Hour. Sticking to roads, have you noticed the price of fuel at your local Bowser? This week, around the nation, we've seen prices shoot up. Records have actually been broken in places like Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. Unleaded got up to $1.75 a litre in Melbourne. That's a record for that capital city. Here in the Territory, fuel prices haven't broken any records, but they have gone up, and it's putting pressure on the transport industry. Max Rowley had a chat to truck driver and one of our favourites here at the Country Hour, Matches Tootle, and spoke to him about how much he's forking out at the moment.
I reckon when I filled up 5 days ago, it was, I've got my little book here, I'll tell you exactly, $1.54.7.
And how does that
really getting up there?
Yeah, and how does that compare to over the past year?
When before Christmas, I reckon it was $1.17.9, something like that. It was we had a great time last year.
And so what kind of impact do those higher diesel prices have on your work?
Well, the rates had to go up a smidgen this year because it's pretty competitive, the trucks at the moment sort of thing. So the rates had to go up a little bit this year, but to cover the fuel costs, but to stay competitive, obviously they couldn't have put them up too much. So they went up a little bit to cover a bit of the costs, and we're just wearing a little bit of the costs, and turned out to be a bit quiet of a year, which means less coins coming in for you. But if you want to look at the cup half full, I suppose, we've done less Ks, so we used less fuel, whereas last year everyone did a bigger mob of Ks and used bigger mob of fuel for very cheap fuel, and this year we haven't used very much and it's very dear, so that's a glass half full.
Is fuel your biggest expense as a truck driver?
Yeah. My truck's in bloody 90 grand old truck, but it's in good nick, but it's an old truck, so payments on it ain't much. Insurance is probably my next one up, and fuel is definitely by furthest, nearly more than the rest of them joined together.
So what do these prices around sitting around 160 cents per litre in Catherine, at least at the moment, what do they mean for you?
They mean I hope they don't go any higher, pretty much. It is what it is. I'm definitely not going to buy a solar truck. So it is what it is. Pay what you got to pay, and if it keeps going up, everyone's going to have to sneak the rate up a little bit. Like we're all going to have to share in it somewhere. Like the client, the companies, we're all going to have to share in it somewhere if they keep going up, pretty much, because they're going up fast.
And just lastly, Matches, AANT are running a survey on risky roads across the Territory at the moment. You can nominate an intersection, a piece of road, or a whole road. You got any nominations?
Wow, that's a big choice, really. Actually, just a wedge of them actually come to mind. I'm going to have trouble narrowing this one down. I reckon... bit that annoys me the most is in between Kemmerwheel and the Queensland border. All the other ones, they seem to be putting a bit of effort into sort of fixing them up a little bit, you know, like out on the Buntine Highway, they're fixing a fair few of the bad ones and that up. But yeah, I reckon in between Avon and Kemmerwheel, that's a pretty average little bit of road there.
That is Matches Tootle. He's a truck driver in the Northern Territory nominating his worst road. If you've got a road out there that you would love to see fixed, then have your say on the Risky Roads Survey that's being conducted by AANT at the moment. On the text 0487991057, got a message here that says, worst road with fuel prices like this, who can afford to travel? That is 0487991057. We'll be catching up with another truckie in just a moment who's been busy unloading cattle at the Darwin port. But first, let's have a tune. The ARIA Awards for this year, the nominations are out today for Best Country Album. Well done to these nominees. Brad Cox for his album My Mind's Projection. Felicity Urquhart and Josh Cunningham, The Song Club. Shane Nicholson's been nominated for Living in Colour. The Wolf Brothers nominated for Kids on Cassette. And one of our favourites here at the Country Hour, Troy Cassadaly, has been nominated Best Country Album for his work with The World Today. Here's a tune from that album. It's called South, featuring Ian Moss. From the album The World Today, which has just been nominated for an ARIA Award, it's Troy Cassadaly featuring Ian Moss and the tune South. What did it all go south?
What's the worst road in the Northern Territory? AANT wants to know. Bill and Bachelor gave us a call. Says the Bachelor Road from the Stuart Highway into town is pretty bad. I agree, Bill. It's as bumpy as hell, that road. It truly is. And it's a pretty main road. You think of all the tourists heading into Lichfield. It is bumpy. What about the Dorat Road? Speaking of bumpy tar, holy dooly. But I'm sure our friends on the Tenami would say you are lucky. You are very lucky to have a bit of tar. AANT, he wants to know what you think the worst bit of road in the Northern Territory is. So that's called the Risky Roads Survey. You'll find it at aant.com.au. Now, the Grayman Express live export ship, it left Darwin Port early this morning, bound for Indonesia. It's carrying around 2,000 head of cattle and around 1,000 head of buffalo. Dan Fitzgerald, he went out to the port to see it all happening and had a chat to truckie Lisa Pepper.
G'day, I'm Lisa Pepper and I'm from Pepper Livestock Transport and we're based in Darwin. I'm currently in here at Darwin Port where we've got trucks that are loading out of Bridge Creek to come in and put a cattle on the Grayman Express for live export, and it's heading over to Indonesia once it's loaded here.
How big of a job is this one?
This load that we're doing, 16 trucks, or 16 loads onto the boat, so we've got 8 trucks and they're doing 2 runs each, so a couple of thousand head going onto the boat.
Will you be here till late tonight?
Well, it depends. This is all based on tide, so it's all planned around, so hopefully not too late, but sometimes I do go late into the night.
And what's your job here today?
My job here today is just to help the trucks make sure that everything runs smoothly, and if there's any issues, I'm on the ground here to help out with it.
What sort of issues arise that you have to troubleshoot?
Well, not normally a lot of issues. Obviously today's issue, we've got a feed truck in here, which means it's tricky for the trucks that are unloading to see the traffic light. So I'm here to help them, let them know when they're right to head off and call the next truck in.
Is it a good job?
Yeah, I don't mind it, except it's a bit warm out here today. But it's a good bunch of truck drivers and the Frontier guys are awesome, so not a bad place to be.
Yeah, the sun is just starting to go behind some clouds. When it was out in full force, it was pretty hot.
Oh, when the sun was out full force, it was very hot. Plenty of water and trying to find a bit of shade where there's a breeze.
What's this job been like for you this year?
Oh, this job's been good. We've done a few boats up here. And we've also helped bring some of the cattle into the export yard, so kept the trucks busy through the top end, Queensland, Northern Territory and over into Western Australia.
And you got to still a few more to do before the year's end?
Yeah, as far as I know, they normally give us a couple of weeks' notice, but there'll be a few boats done before the year's out.
All right, thanks for having a chat with the Country Hour.
No worries, thank you.
Yeah, big thanks to Lisa Pepper from Pepper Transport, speaking there to Dan Fitzgerald. So that ship sailed away this morning, not without incident, unfortunately. You might have caught this in the news. Yesterday at East Arm, a 50-year-old man was injured by one of the cattle being loaded onto that ship and had to be taken to hospital. Here's Craig Garraway from St John's.
About 4 o'clock yesterday, I believe a 50-year-old male there was hit in the chest by a cow. I believe, obviously, that probably doing something out there in those loading areas with all those cattle, and he's been hit in the chest quite badly and required us to attend and transport him to the Royal Darwin Hospital for a number of injuries, mainly around his chest area, but I believe he's making a full recovery. But yeah, big cows, and obviously they all got a bit excited and he got caught in the middle of it all.
We wish that worker all the best with his recovery. Not good there. In some other live export news, the shipping company Wellard has released its quarterly activity and cash flow report. Things looking pretty good for Wellard, generating $3.2 million during that period. The outlook for the short term, though, is not looking that flash. In a statement, Wellard said, "It's apparent that live cattle exports from Northern Australia are slowing even further from their low base, and our current forward charter program and existing inquiry indicate the breeder cattle market will comprise most, if not all, of our charter demand for the second quarter of the financial year." It says the depressed northern cattle live export trade, along with a very lumpy South America to Middle East trade, continues to place pressure on freight rates for livestock vessels. That's in a statement out from the company Wellard. It is time now on the Country Hour to head to the sale yards. With all latest prices out of Dublin, South Australia, here's John Traeger.
Good afternoon. Numbers reduced this week as agents offered 275 live weight cattle and 25 open oxen calves. All the usual buyers were in attendance and operating, but competition was only steady on suitable local trade cattle. Prices here on a smaller number but generally good quality offering eased 20 to 30 cents a kilo and more in places with heavier cattle the least affected. Pastoral calves from the Hawker region, being Black Baldy and Hereford, received strong rear stocker support to sell marginally dearer than similar recent sales. Grown steers sold from 432 to 522 cents. Heavy grain heifers sold from 402 to 522. Lightweight pastoral bulls sold from 421 to a top of 676 cents, as local yearling bulls ranged from 400 to 500 cents. Medium-weight bulls sold from 270 to 430 cents, as heavyweights of the trade peaked at 280 cents a kilo. This is John Traeger at the South Australian Livestock Exchange for MLE's National Livestock Reporting Service and the Country Hour.
Thank you for that, John. On the Country Hour yesterday, we heard about some record money being forked out at the Roma sale yards. And that has influenced the ECI. The Eastern Young Cattle Indicator yesterday hit another all-time high, this time of 1,064 cents a kilo carcass weight. An unbelievable rise again in the ECI. We've been talking about bad roads in the Northern Territory. Got one vote here for the Lassiter. And we got a call from Matty in the Gardens. The Lejeune Station Access Road. Says Matty, what? I thought that was the best road in the Northern Territory. Not according to Matty. He says it's cost taxpayers so much and we haven't got anything in return, reckons Matty. AANT wants to hear from you. If you've got a shocking bit of road or intersection in your part of the Territory, get involved and hopefully make some change. That's the idea of this Risky Roads Survey. It's on the AANT website. Hope you've enjoyed today's Country Hour. Well done to Cara Peak, the National Rural Women's Award winner. And keep it rural.